I am a Sparty. I am a Spartan supporter, but I'm always interested in what's going on with Michigan. I just think that the sports history down there is very intriguing, and I like to know what our arch rivals are doing down there. I listen to 1050 on the radio sometimes because I like a gentleman by the name of Sam, and I can't remember his last name, but he knows a lot about Michigan football and basketball. And I've also listened to John U. Bacon, who had a program. He still may have it on 1050 WTKA. He's a Michigan guy. He's a teacher. He's an author, and he has written a fascinating book. It's called Three and Out, Rich Rodriguez and the Michigan Wolverines in the Cubicle of College Football. John, I want to thank whoever was responsible for bringing Rich Rodriguez in, because I believe it allowed Michigan State to get on par with Michigan when it comes to football. Good morning to you.
Oh, you're a cruel man, Tony. You're a cruel man.
You know,
but Dave, 4-0 the last 4 years. There's no spinning that, is there?
No, there's not. And you know what I find interesting? I listen to 1050, and you listen to those guys, and they think Michigan's going to win every Saturday. They thought Michigan was going to beat Michigan State this year. And what I learned, I used to think that those fans, those broadcasters were cocky and arrogant. But what I learned, it's not that. It's more of an expectation. It's more than 100 years of tradition, and it's almost shocking when they don't win, because it's the culture that's been created.
Well, I mean, compared to Michigan State basketball right now, starting from the Magic days, the Judd Heathcote, but geez, under Izzo the last 10, 12 years, and I know Tom quite well, he's obviously huge in Lansing, really huge nationwide, and I'm a big admirer of his for sure, but he said to me, you know, one of these years we ought to just miss the tournament to remind people around here it's not automatic. And in the same sense, I think Michigan fans were reminded the last 3-4 years, that the success that they've always enjoyed is not automatic. You got to earn it, and right now Michigan State has got it. And in some ways, it's probably a good lesson to maybe decrease some of that famed Michigan arrogance you might have heard of. But yeah, the expectation goes back 100 years, and it's in the book. I mean, the victors is the only fight song I know. I mean, On Wisconsin says, you know, fight on for fame, you got to win this game. The Men of the Scarlet and Gray say, you know, got to win this game today, you know, fight, 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 the Michigan State fight song, of course. The victor says, screw you, we've already won, we're going home. If that's not arrogance, you know, built into the DNA in 1898, well, that's kind of your expectation. So you're right, this is part of the DNA.
All right, before we start talking about the book, as someone who's a sports guy, I was never afraid of the hire of Rich Rodriguez, but I was a Brady Hoke. I knew of him. I knew what he's done. He's got a track record. He's tough. He's a Michigan guy. He reminded me of Bo, but I was never afraid of Rich. As a matter of fact, when they brought him in, I didn't know it was going to turn out the way it did, but I thought, you know what? We're going to be fine.
Well, you were smarter than most, weren't you? Because when he was hired, despite this very crazy surge that was all over the place and upset a lot of Michigan men, his team had been number one a few weeks earlier at West Virginia and nearly missed out on a chance at the national title game by blowing a game to Pitt. He invented the spread offense, as people know, of course, and you've got a program that was 9-4 under Lloyd Carr and was about to beat Florida, the returning national champs, in the Citrus Bowl. So you think, wow, hottest coach in the country, winning this program in the country, this is, you know, the match made in heaven. Well, we know it's now ended in a very ugly divorce, so you were smarter than most. Most folks thought this was the hire of the year, and look back at all the clips from Sports Illustrated, from Jim Cardi and the Ann Arbor News and other sources, you know, smart people, who all seem to think this is going to work out great. And, of course, it was anything but a great match in terms of all that.
All right, John, many people think that you are committing professional suicide and perhaps social suicide. You're a Michigan guy. You love the blue. What caused you to write this book? Because it's very damaging to the University of Michigan.
Well, you're not wasting your punches here, Tony. And so far, you're spot on. First of all, when I got into this project, the whole idea was in 2008, just to hang around the team for 3 months to do a story on the spread offense coming to the very conservative Big Ten and the even more conservative, you know, Michigan football program, which of course is 3 yards in a cloud of dust. So the idea was very simple. It was not going to be controversial, but then after 3-9, you got to go back for a second year. The story is hardly done. And after, you know, then you got 5-7, then 7-6, then he gets fired. you realize that, wow, you got one heck of a story here, and most of it is off the field. Also, some of it, as you point out, is not that pretty. Rich Rodriguez, you know, has got his flaws, and he made his mistakes, and they are in the book. But Michigan also made a lot of mistakes. They did not really hold up their end of the deal in supporting him the way they could have. Not the fans necessarily, but the institution. So you got a problem. So you sit down in January, Tony, and you realize, okay, you're right. This could cost me in a lot of ways. I've got a lot of ties to the university and, of course, a lot of friends, too. I was born and raised here, for crying out loud. My dad's a doctor at the hospital, so I got 2 degrees. So plenty of ties, and I teach here on the side. But you sit down in January, and, I mean, you're asking good questions. You're a journalist. So you sit down in January, am I a PR man? Am I a journalist? And if you're a journalist, your job is to tell the truth. So that's what I've done without any regard. It was not like a chance I'm taking in terms of, okay, I'm going to do this in the hopes that I get a bestseller or something really hits, whatever else. No. In January, you've got no idea what you've got. Your job is to tell the truth. So that's what I tried to do without getting too melodramatic about the whole thing. And let the chips fall where they may. It's not always been comfortable. It's not always been fun. But as far as the damage goes to Michigan, my belief is this. If it's going to sting in the short run, I get that. But any foundation, look at Izzo's basketball program again. It's built on truth. It's built on honesty. If it's not built on these things, you don't have much of an institution. And if you get off the path for a little while, you need to be corrected and get back on that path. In the long run, this will help Michigan, I believe. The Michigan I know wants the truth. And the fans I've talked to, the vast majority, want to know what happened.
John Hugh Bacon is the author of Three and Out, Rich Rodriguez and the Michigan Wolverines in the Cubicle of College Football. I don't know if there's precedence to kick you out of the press box, but I heard a good line on the morning show on 1050. It said you're going to be sitting in the far row of the stadium. What's been the fallout? What's been the feedback from the university about the book?
Well, most of it's been privately rendered, I guess you'd say. I've learned through various means and various channels. The discontent that certainly Dave Brandon and Lloyd Carr have for the book. Dave Brandon has said he's not read the book, doesn't care about it. That's completely false. He's read the book, he's complained about various passages to various people, and he even called me in for a meeting in May for an hour to talk about the book, and it was a civil conversation, but he made it very clear that he hopes the book fails, and if I were him, that's a rational position. I'm not even critiquing that, but trust me, he has read the book. It is on his radar.
All right, maybe I'm just too much of an optimist, but I haven't read the book, but I've read excerpts and also reviews, and so I think I got a good flavor of the book. After I read it, what I read, John, I thought, you know what, this is going to be good because they're going to know where they made mistakes and they're going to move on. 3 years out of 100 plus won't do much, and David Brandon actually wasn't a part of this except for the end. So why is he so bent out of shape?
Tony, I'm with you, buddy. good question. He looks, I think, by and large, pretty good in the book in terms of he handled the NCAA media conferences very well, a real pro at that, and at a time when you needed someone who's very PR savvy because you say the wrong things during those press conferences, it looks really bad. So that was my take on it, but, you know, who knows? I guess he did not like the fact that I pointed out that he's the fifth straight athletic director at Michigan who's never worked in an athletic department before taking the job. That's just a fact. I mean, you can't, you know, at the one hand, brag about being a CEO of Domino's Pizza for 11 years, and then, you know, be upset that someone points out you were not working at Michigan during that time, which is fair game. And he's got, you know, we say in that chapter, he's got a lot of pluses going for him. But as far as the fall goes, yes, the press box seat, I've got the highest seat in the entire stadium right now. That has changed. And I'm so high up, I got a duck to look through the windows to see the scoreboards, which I really can't see. I'm only 5'8", Tony. I can bang my head on some of the stuff up there. But the flip side is this, you know, big deal. How many fans would trade for a spot in the press box? You know, I'm warm, I'm dry. I get fed, all's well.
Okay, so. Why do you think that Michigan feared the exodus of players after Lloyd Carr retired?
Well, sad to say, it was because of Lloyd Carr. A day or two after Rodriguez has his press conference introducing him as the coach, he flies back to Morgantown. Excuse me. Lloyd Carr has a sudden meeting of his team early in the morning, and that was intentional. And he tells them all, if anyone here wants to transfer, I will sign your forms. And he has his director of operations, Scott Draper, call compliance to tell them to be ready with the forms, be ready for a line of players out the door, have staffers, you know, ready to process this as quickly as possible. That gets up to, of course, the director of compliance, Judy Van Horn, who told me on the record. She called Bill Martin, says we can't have this, the AD. She calls Rich Rodriguez, and he says, well, I don't want anyone to play for me who does not want to play for me, but I want to talk to anybody and everybody before we sign one of those forms. That's all I'm asking for. She calls the Big Ten compliance office to make sure that's okay, and they say, yeah, that's fine, because he's not saying you can't transfer, just I want to talk to you first. So, okay, and she calls back Scott Draper, and he says, and I quote from Judy Van Horn, but Lloyd won't like that. So Lloyd is upset about the fact that not all transfers were processed that morning, which is rather bizarre, frankly. Ryan Mallett, the old quarterback, never met Rich Rodriguez. He had already transferred before Rodriguez had even moved into the office. So the reports that he had scared off Mallett are completely false, and that was the theory at the time. So at that point, you've got a problem, and even the players who stay have gotten the very clear message that this is not a coach you need to respect. I don't respect him. And if you don't like him, come talk to me. And if that's not a foundation for a problem, I don't know what it is.
Why didn't Lloyd like Rich Rodriguez?
Good question. Also, at that point, I got to tell you, he didn't even know him. I mean, a week earlier, he was calling him up, Lloyd Carr was, to pitch him on the job, and then reported this phone call to Bill Martins, who was kind of the matchmaker just 7 days earlier. This is the big mystery of the book that I can't answer without talking to Lloyd Carr, and he's declined to respond to my request, so that's his prerogative. But I won't take anyone else's testimony on something that important.
Yeah, was Lloyd miffed because he was left out of the process of hiring the new coach?
Tony, you're good, buddy. Yeah, that's certainly part of the equation, that he was definitely upset with that, but that's not Rich's fault. That's obviously Bill Martin's, you know, decision. Although Bill Martin did talk to him throughout the process, I understand that. But he definitely wanted and expected to be able to name a successor, as Bo had done twice with both Gary Mueller and Lloyd Carr. So there's a lot of bad feeling in November, December of 2007.
Now, John, I know you have an interview set up for 8:30. Can you spend another 6-minute segment, or
Absolutely.
You got something? We're going to do. We're going to go to our news break, and we'll get you back on. And when we come back, we'll talk about the tradition of Michigan and why it appeared that Rich Rodriguez was trying to get rid of this tradition.